I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here for 2 hours a day from 9 to 11 o'clock. Today is Tuesday. Next hour, we're going to do some Tech Tuesday news. There's some kind of creepy stuff coming out of the tech world out there we want to talk about. We covered last week that they were saying that artificial intelligence has started coming up with its own language, unintelligible to us mere mortals. Apparently, they're talking to each other now. And a Google engineer that's been on the inside of the AI programs at Google is raising some alarm bells as well. So we'll take a look at these things while I can, while our robot overlords are still allowing us to live our lives and for me to speak freely on the air today. So we'll take a look at some of that stuff in Tech Tuesday today. And I think I'm going to have my crypto consigliere, Stephen Yatroska, call in and explain to us. There was another big bust in the crypto markets. This was a crypto lender. I barely know what that means. It was called Celsius, but they stopped investors from withdrawing money, transferring money, anything. They gated it. And so I don't know exactly what took place, why this happened, but I know that a gating is never a good thing for clients, at least at the moment. So we're going to take a look at that. Bitcoin has been taking a prison pounding over the last couple of days. When I looked this morning, it was around 22,000. For reference, its high was 69,000. So it's down by over 60% so far this year. Or actually, I think the high might have been last year at some point. So anyway, a lot of things going on in the tech world. Quotes of the day today. Christopher Hitchens said, "The people who must never have power are the humorless." The people who must never have power are the humorless. Amen to that. We have got a wildly unfunny government at just about every level. So H.L. Mencken said, and this is going to kind of lead me into my show. A lot of times show topics are spurred by conversations, and I had one last night I want to recount to you. H.L. Mencken said, "Government is actually the worst failure of civilized man. There has never been a really good one, and even those that are most tolerable are arbitrary, cruel, grasping, and unintelligent." This show is getting more and more anti-government by the day, driven by the Biden administration of these days. I was already full-on libertarian, bordering on anarchist. Before Joe Biden took office, I'm pretty much there now. Government is actually the worst failure of civilized man. There has never been a really good one, and even those that are most tolerable are arbitrary, cruel, grasping, and unintelligent. And that'll kind of lead me into my show today. You know, I was talking to a guy last night. He's in the car business. And let me just warn you, if you ever run into me in a private setting, there's almost nothing you can say if you're in any level of business these days that I'm not going to want to talk to you for about 30 minutes to find out everything I can about your industry. I'm an economics nerd. I'm really curious as to what is actually happening, boots on the ground, in our economy here. And so I'm always interested in the car business. We've seen a lot of weird things going on in the car business, from chip shortages to the massive increases in the cost of used cars. Apparently, that's starting to abate now. Obviously, financing is about to become an issue as interest rates rise. So I'm always interested in these industries. We got talking. He's with a major manufacturer, a European car brand. And we started talking about this push towards electric. and that the car manufacturer was pretty much saying the last, you know, gasoline engines are within sight now. They've just pretty much said we are headed towards these electric cars. And he knows, as a car guy, as well as I know, and I said, are we ready for this? And he said, no, absolutely not. I mean, they are pushing this to where the car companies are, and this is a little bit with the oil companies now, too. There's so much dishonesty in what the oil companies do. You know, sometimes when they say, well, we just can't do this and we can't do that because of the regulations, I suspect that the regulations are put in place just to stop the oil companies from having to make these investments. They're making record profits. The oil companies are doing great now. Now, maybe they can make more actual dollars by pumping more and refining more, and maybe there is more. But when you have companies right now in the current landscape where we are paying north of $5 a gallon for gasoline on average in the United States, and they're making record profits, I don't really know what their complaint would be. It seems like maybe it's to their benefit for everything that's transpiring right now to be transpiring. But, you know, this push towards electric vehicles, we're just not ready for it. It makes no logical sense right now. It doesn't take long to see these events that we see constantly, particularly during the winter months, where we'll have a huge crash on a highway somewhere and people are stranded for 18 hours. That's basically an electric car. That's basically a death sentence. Sub-freezing temperatures, 18 hours. If you dare get on the highway and you're not at full charge, there's a very good likelihood you may freeze to death. Not to mention, we are at the same time they're pushing us towards electric cars, they are warning us right now of rolling blackouts across the country. They say the grid and our power generation is not capable of handling the heat. We're obviously in the middle of a heat wave right now. They're saying Texas and the West is being slammed by a heat wave, and so they are warning us of rolling blackouts. At the same time, they tell us that we need to put our cars on the grid. How many cars are in the United States? A couple hundred million cars? You're going to add a couple hundred million cars daily to the grid, and right now you can't run our air conditioners without brownouts and blackouts around the country? And, you know, this car guy I was talking to last night, I didn't really feel like the car company that his thought was that the car company was necessarily excited about this. This isn't a push for this innovation that they believe is better and it's being done voluntarily. They're being pushed there by governments not only here but around the world in this green revolution they are forcing us towards. And I ask him, and I would say it to all of us as well, and not just on this issue, if I can make a suggestion, and it may sound stupid, but I'm actually kind of serious about this. I've talked before about the fact that I believe the motto of the American people has for decades now been, duh, okay. When politicians come out and say, hey, this year we're going to take 27% of your income, Americans go, duh, okay. When presidents just unilaterally commit our troops, our boys and girls, sons and daughters, moms and dads, brothers and sisters, halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand for 20 years, Americans just went, duh, okay. And I would really suggest that at some point, and I believe this point will come, it may be forced, it would be great if we actually were proactive in some of these things, but can I suggest we change the motto of a free American from duh, okay, to just one simple word, just no. Just no. You know, these car companies should be able, but they're so entangled with the government. These car companies, they get subsidies, they get tax breaks, they get all of these other things. We've got this. It's really a fascist system, this corporate control over our government and government control over our corporations through all kinds of entanglements. But you would think that some car company would just say no. Our customers want gasoline-powered cars, and then the government will come in and say, well, look, if you're going to continue to produce gasoline-powered cars, we're going to charge, you know, X number of dollars per car as pretty much a fine for defying us in the push towards the Green Revolution. And some brave car company should stand up and say, no, we're not paying those fines. And if customers are forced to purchase electric cars or face some level of a fine, some tax, this is how it will come. This is how they will push you towards buying these cars. Oh, they won't come out and say we're outlawing gasoline cars, but if you still drive a gasoline car, we're going to levy $2,500 a year tax on you, not to mention the cost you pay for gasoline. And if they try to put this tax on the owners of gasoline-powered cars, then taxpayers should just say no. Or I strike that term, taxpayers, and just say free Americans should just say no. You know, and this is really kind of across the spectrum of all kinds of different things. We really had golden opportunities, and so few rose to the occasion over the 2 years of COVID hysteria. And we're about to get to a big no in just a second. But we had all the opportunities in the world for business owners across the state of Mississippi here, central Mississippi, when Tate Reeves came out and said, you can only serve 25% of your capacity. Everybody was within their moral right and legal right as a business owner to just look at Tate Reeves and Thomas Dobbs and say, no, my doors are open. Any seat that is not filled, a customer is welcome to sit in. I'm not forcing anyone to be here. They're making the choice themselves. So no. And there were just so few brave business owners out there that just said no to all of these things. And as I say, I believe this is coming. You're going to be forced into a corner because they're going to get some gun legislation through Congress. They've got their bipartisan group now. It was interesting. I think it was Dana Lash yesterday was talking about the fact that these Republicans who have signed on to a Senate gun control bill, including taxpayer cash, money printed from the Federal Reserve. This is why I tell you the Federal Reserve is the Death Star. You want to stop all these things you're complaining about? You better focus in on the Fed, because Lindsey Graham has come up with this plan that the federal government can float grants out to states if they enact red flag laws. A bribe. Where the hell do you think the government gets the money to bribe the states to enact red gun laws, red flag laws? They get it from the Federal Reserve. This is why I keep harping on this. Once you finally understand that it is the root of all evil in this country, that they could not accomplish the welfare state or the warfare state without the Federal Reserve, maybe people would catch a clue. And we would say no to that institution as well. But what are you going to say when these things come? Wouldn't it be great if gun stores across the country, those firm believers in the Second Amendment, they've already let so many things go. When they come to your gun store and they say, hey, we're here for all the bump stocks, the gun store owner just goes, no. We're here for all your suppressors, no. We're here for your high-capacity magazines, no. Just a big fat no. It's really a very simple word that we have not exercised in this country. And the thing is, this is a bit utopian, and I'm aware of it. I have no faith in the fact that the American people en masse would say no. I don't know what number of people it would take to begin saying no to what's going on at governments at every level. It takes a lot of courage. Some might lead, but it's, the figure was always bandied about the American Revolutionary War was 3% of the people really kind of said no and got everything going. Most people were disengaged like they are today. I don't know if that number today is 3%, 5%, 10%, 20%, 50%. I don't know what it would take. It's going to take people from the right and the left. I'll tell you that right now, because at some point there are going to be things in your life that you're going to want to say no to, that you're going to need to say no to stay a free human being and to stop this train wreck that is coming. This push towards electrifying everything and getting rid of gasoline-powered cars, coal-fired plants, this is going to turn us into a third-world country. And we face a whole lot of different problems. There's no doubt about it. We've got the culture wars in our schools. There's a lot of things to be concerned about. But this push towards electric, when you're talking to car people, and the cars just the manufacturers just can't make investment in gas powered cars anymore. They are making this decision right now behind the scenes. In 10 or 20 years, you may have real problems finding anything other than an electric vehicle. And we're not prepared for that. Are you prepared to miss every third day of work? Are you prepared to not be able to go pick up your children when you need to pick up your children because you can't can't power up on the grid because we've got blackouts. I mean, I just see this train wreck coming, but it is one of a multitude of train wrecks that I and other libertarians have seen coming, and Americans have refused to say no, didn't say no to the Patriot Act. You don't say no to the drug war. You don't say no to the endless wars overseas. We say, duh, okay. But at some point, I mean, you look at this. I ran across this story. The FAA requires SpaceX to make environmental adjustments. Federal Aviation Administration on Monday concluded a long-awaited assessment of SpaceX's Starship rocket program in Texas. In a press release, the FAA noted SpaceX will be required to take more than 75 actions to mitigate environmental impacts before the company can receive a launch license. SpaceX needs a license from the regulator to conduct further Starship flight tests and begin operational launches from its private facility. Boy, I would love to see Elon Musk say no and just launch a rocket. The FAA, in a long-awaited press release, they've been studying this for a while. They've come out, and now this agency, like I talked about yesterday, what democracy are they trying to save with the January 6th people? What democracy? I didn't vote for anybody at the FAA, at any of these three-letter agencies that boss us around, that just, I mean, this is going to make, obviously, any space travel, any exploration, any innovation in space travel more expensive. The FAA has just arbitrarily done a long study and said, here's 75 things you have to do before we will allow you to launch a rocket on your own land. SpaceX needs to say no. It's a really, really powerful word, and I know this sounds really simplistic and stupid, and it really is in practice. I don't know exactly how it starts, but it's what's needed. You know, when George Flags was over in Vicksburg during COVID and he was locking people down, putting them under house arrest from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. because that was just his decision. He felt that COVID was such an existential threat to everybody, they put curfews in. And people should have just left their house, and when stopped by police for daring to be on a public road at 8 o'clock and said, well, we got to take you in, they should have said no. Nope. If enough people say no, there's nothing they can do. That's the power in numbers. It's just a problem. I would call it the great nullification. Matter of fact, I may run for Congress on this. Just saying no. And it goes back to one of the few great statesmen, congressmen we've ever had, Dr. Ron Paul. He was known as Dr. No. He made a career, one of the best careers serving the American people that's ever existed in the halls of Congress, and his reputation was just saying no. We need more people saying no. You know, I had a boxer, dog, boxer. It was just the greatest dog. His name was Joe. He was named after the great American boxer, Joe Louis. If you listen to my April 15th show every year, you know Joe Louis was destroyed by the U.S. IRS. But he was a true American hero, Joe Louis, and I named my dog after him. He was the sweetest dog, but he had been an abused dog before I got him. When I got him, he had some scars on him and things like that. And I got to tell you, there was always something underlying him. That former abuse was always just right underneath the surface. He rarely ever gave me any trouble. But there were just a few times during the 8 or 9 years that I had him after adopting him, just the greatest dog ever, I would want him to get off the couch, and he would refuse. Might have been somebody coming over, something might have happened, I might need to clean something, but he was really comfortable, and I would try to get him off the couch. And I got to tell you, he made me a little nervous. This sweet, lovable dog had this kind of underlying edge that if he was really not down with the command, and usually he was always, you know, I think some of his abuse, he wasn't necessarily the smartest dog. He was just so sweet and so loving and so happy. He was just the best dog ever. But occasionally, I would need him to do something that he did not want to do. And I would get this low, guttural growl. And I knew at that point, he meant business. And if I decided that I needed to clean the couch so badly that I was probably risking life or limb, to take this dog, I don't know if you're familiar with the breed of boxer, but they've got quite the jaws on them. I'll put it that way. I've never been attacked by a boxer. I do not want to be attacked by a boxer. And there was just this little growl where he kind of put out this notice, you might want to back off. I'm going to stay here on the couch. This really only happened probably two or three times. But it was a message. Americans need to come up with a low, guttural growl. We can do a polite no, but if pushed, we need to develop this growl that lets them know, you don't push us any further. You're not going to like what comes next. And when I come back, I got to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to beg parents to say their first big no. Oh, my gosh. This is a biggie. This is where you should start. We'll be right back. Salvation. Radio is queen of the nation. They say you better listen to the wise side of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I'm struggling to come up with stuff for a show that's not wildly aggravating to me at this point. This country's out of control. I've told you many times in different contexts, the speed wobble on skateboards. You're going down a big hill. If you remember doing this as a kid, maybe not everybody rode skateboards, but I sure did when I was a kid. Found a big juicy hill. Man, last thing, I remember constantly riding around with my parents. We'd be going anywhere, driving anywhere, and I'd be looking through the front windshield, seeing where we're going, and I would just see a hill, and I'd be like, oh, that'd be a great skateboard hill. Well, when you find yourself a great hill, and you get on your skateboard, and you're going down it, and the wheels start to wobble, I mean, there's no level of control there. And I'll admit, back in the day, helmet? What kind of helmet? We didn't use helmets. That shows you, I mean, yeah, I'm dating myself a little bit here, but I wasn't coated up in pads and helmets. My parents didn't, well, maybe they just didn't love me, but they didn't send me out in bubble wrap the way we send our kids out now. You start going down that hill and that skateboard starts to wobble. You just hope you get close enough to the grass that you're not going to be skidding across the pavement in shorts and no shirt, which is what my summer attire generally was. But this country is on a speed wobble right now. There's no doubt about it to me. We are going to wipe out. Do we have a really horrific landing, or do we have just a tumble through the grass that's a little embarrassing and a little humbling, but we live to fight another day? This is the question we have right now. We're going to get into some of the things facing us. And I'm struggling right now with the news. And yes, I will admit that Biden has made this horrifically worse. He's the worst president. He may be the worst world leader. I hate to even use that term. I don't mean leader. He's not leading anybody. And we know he's this administration. I guess I should really put it that way, because we know Joe Biden's not making any decisions. He doesn't know what's going on. He is one of the worst heads of state. I guess I should put it that way. He is one of the worst heads of state I've ever known about. And now we've got Justin Trudeau to the north. He is pretty bad, but America is full of so much promise and has had so much freedom. We've got so much opportunity to do so many great things in this country if we're left alone by the political class. And this administration wants to cut us off at every pass. It's hard to do a show and see what's happening to this country. I was accused a few weeks ago of being a little bit of a Daryl Downer. I admit to it. I mean, It's rough. And this is what brings me to the great nullification, the big fat no. We should just learn to say no to this stuff. We've got to get these busybodies out of our lives. And you're not going to vote them out. I've been trying that for 50 years. Much longer than that, but modern history. I've been trying to vote these people out. You just keep putting different political classes in there who... they've got their own. I mean, you've got Lindsey Graham right now. You voted real hard on those R's. You got Lindsey Graham out there right now proposing grants to give to the states to enact red flag laws. How's that voting for the Republicans doing for you? I just need to say no. Just say no. I got to take a break. I went a little bit long opening segment because I'm so ticked off about this stuff. But when I come back, parents need to say their first big no. We are about to embark on a real human tragedy here if we allow this to happen. And parents are the ones who can stand in the gap. I pray for all of the children in this country that parents, by and large, not all of them, I know a lot of them, will participate in what's going on with our children. We're always shocked. I mean, somebody took their kids to that drag queen show. We're shocked at what some parents will do. But for the vast majority of American parents, let's hope that they are sane for their children's sake. We'll get to that when we come back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me here at this little rebel outpost, this little radical anti-government show. I can already tell you right now, I podcast this show daily. You can just search for The Mike Madison Show. I think I was pulled down off of Spotify, but you can find it on a lot of different podcasting platforms. I don't even know where, but it's out there. And I can tell you right now, the title of today's show is just going to be No. It's what we need to start saying. I know a lot of people, they don't say no to a whole lot of things because basically we don't want to get in trouble with the government that is abusing us. You know, if you know somebody in an abusive relationship, a wife who's beaten by her husband, forced to do things she doesn't want to do, you tell that woman, you just say no. you stop being abused. Well, that we're being abused. There's an easy no to say, though. Right now, it won't get you in any trouble, but it may get you some strange looks, and you may have to take some action. If you are a parent out there of a toddler, I beg you to say your very first no in the coming days. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration's Vaccine Advisory Council will meet today to consider, that's code for the decision's already made. They work for the pharmaceutical companies, not for the American people, to consider granting emergency use authorization, an EUA, of the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines for children under 5 years old. Even though the White House last week announced it is already filling orders for the vaccine placed by states and, here we come, healthcare providers. The FDA is going to approve COVID shots for toddlers under 5 years old. And I saw a clip yesterday. Chuck Schumer was talking about this gun control stuff, and he basically said, if we can save just one life, then it will be worth it. And that's how all these things are couched to you. If we can just save one life, I mean, because every life is precious. How great is it to save a life? But, you know, when it comes to gun control, we understand that if you disarm the American people, a lot of innocent people will die because only criminals will have guns. Here's how the media is going to sell you on this shot for your toddlers. I don't watch mainstream media anymore. I don't. I broke my early morning news so I could catch up habit. I finally detoxed from all of that. I don't watch major media, but you will see stories of children under the age of five who they tell you were killed by COVID. They'll probably either gloss over or ignore the fact that these children were leukemia patients or had other really, really catastrophic health conditions, but they will focus you in on these children who died from COVID under five. Your chance of your child recovering from COVID under the age of five is 99.9995. COVID is not a threat. Your chance of your child having a catastrophic event in related to COVID is statistically zero. But they're going to try to convince, in order to feed the big pharma masters, you to experiment on your child with an experimental gene therapy. There's no long-term safety studying on these things, none whatsoever. And they're going to try to convince you to give these shots for your child. I would suggest to you, if your doctor even dares to suggest such a stupid idea, you run. You immediately change doctors. Say your first no to this experiment on your children, and then find a new doctor. Somebody shared yesterday, a group that I am in, shared one of the local medical groups in Madison. I believe they are already teasing the idea. Hey, parents, get ready. Time to get excited. The new shots are coming out. We're finally getting the green light to give your children, who have a statistical zero chance of having a bad COVID outcome, an experimental gene therapy. And this medical group, very prominent medical group in Madison County, is very excited, and they're trying to tease it out. Now, I have not really done my research. These a lot of these medical clinics, I've explained before, a lot of them with some of the providers, some of the insurance providers, they actually give these groups bonuses if a certain percentage of their patient population is up to date on all shots. It's something like if you get 80% of your population, of your patient population with a significant number of shots, you get something like a bonus of $400 per child. Understand there is a profit motive to these things, but you may actually have a deranged medical professional who believes that a shot with no long-term safety studies whatsoever should be given to a child whose internal organs, their brain, their bones, everything is still just barely developing. And they're going to convince you to put this shot into your child for a non-existent risk. Now, I believe ultimately we may find out the truth of this shot at some point. And at that point, one would hope, although there's so many legal protections for our medical community when it comes to these things, that these doctors who submit these children to this grand experiment would be charged with crimes. But I don't hold my breath on that. But at the very least, they should not be allowed within 50 yards of your child. And be warned, that's how they'll sell it. They'll trot out the stories about dead toddlers due to COVID over the last couple of years and heartbreaking stories to tell you that you can now prevent this if you just line your child up and roll that sleeve up and get them to take this shot. This should be your very first no. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. This is Robert. How are you today?
Fine. What's going on?
Well, you know, you're talking about the medical community. You're talking about wanting the doctors and the medical community to have some kind of morals and ethics. These are the same people who are engaged in all of this transgender for kids.
Oh, yeah.
They're involved in changing little boys into little girls and trying to make little girls into little boys genetically.
I have talked about some of the biggest medical schools. I got a story about that tomorrow for my health segment. Some of the biggest medical schools, the associations have been pushing weird stuff like this. They have gone woke in many of those things. But I would submit to you that throughout the local central Mississippi, rather conservative medical establishment, many of them might still see that as some level of extreme. But they will believe that this new, untested, no long-term safety data, particularly for toddlers, I mean, we do not have any, even months worth of research into toddlers taking this gene therapy for long-term safety. They will think this is perfectly acceptable. They will be pushing this. As I said, one of the biggest medical groups in Madison is already teasing their parents to get excited because this shot is about to become available for their under 5 years old. This is unbelievable to see.
Well, they've been pushing shots and flu vaccines and all of these other immunizations for years and years and years.
You're right.
Doesn't surprise me that, here's one more. And the doctors, the medical community is the biggest proponent, as far as the doctors, the biggest proponent for all of these vaccines.
Yeah.
They're pushing the heck out of them. So it tells me that these must be a huge profit center.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Huge profit center.
Yeah.
And people are just, one of the problems that we have in our society, and I've done it. I've been guilty of it before. But we want to trust our doctor.
Oh, if they got the white lab coat on.
When a doctor tells you this is your treatment, you've got cancer and we need to do chemo right now.
Yeah.
And we just say, okay.
Yep.
And, when they start talking about all of these different things that you need to do and can do, it's always some kind of medical treatment. They never talk about the things that you need to do to prevent the flu or to prevent, actually prevent it. Other than their vaccine.
Well, this is, I've told this story many times, but this same medical group that I saw I don't know if it was a text or an email or what it was from them, the same medical group, this is where I took my children when they were young. And I remember going in and seeing my pediatrician, and he noticed how healthy they were in his charts. He saw they were never sick. And He asked me why that was, essentially, to try to make the story shorter. And I started to tell him that I had started paying attention to my children's diet and had switched them to mostly organic and gotten a lot of the junk out. And so, and within 10 seconds, he showed that he was completely disinterested. He had no interest whatsoever in how I kept my children healthy. So this idea that, you know, this shot is just because these doctors believe that this is what will keep children healthy from COVID. They already know you can still get COVID, you can still spread COVID, and there is zero long-term safety trials on this vaccine for the most rapidly developing humans. They've still got a couple of decades of development ahead of them. And they are going to inject this gene therapy into these children. This is it's a crime. I mean, and God help the parents who trust these doctors should something go wrong. Maybe it's okay. But with children, even more than anything, particularly these toddlers, we have the luxury of waiting. They have a statistically 0% chance of having a catastrophic COVID outcome. So it doesn't really matter. They're not at risk of anything. So if we want to wait for 10 years to find out if the shot has any long-term side effects, then our children are still safe. They're not going to die from COVID for not having this shot. And shame on the doctors who understand that most vaccines go through 7 to about 12 years of safety testing, and they are going to take this one that has probably got a few months of a bogus study, and I've got some statistics on that too, of a bogus study. They are going to inject these newly developing children 6 months old. There will be doctors within the coming days injecting an experimental gene therapy into 6-month-old babies. And this is going to be horrific for a certain percentage of those parents who subject their children to this stuff.
Well, and now they've got young adults that are falling out like crazy.
Yep.
And we've come up with, instead of being factually honest about it, we just said, well, we're just calling this sudden adult death syndrome.
Right.
What? Wait a minute. It's not sudden. You knew it was going to happen, and we knew there was collateral damage, and they didn't care.
They do not care. Well, this is, like I say, the theme of this show is just no, and this is the big first one. If anybody's going to say no to anything at any time, at the very least, for even you, the hysterics out there, you may be some of the duck people that's walking around in the N95 mask. Can you at least tell your doctor, I'll wait? Can you just wait a little while, knowing that the statistic is your child has a 99.9995% chance of surviving anything COVID can throw at them? Can you just wait a little while to get a little bit more information in before you subject your children to this? This should be a no-brainer no for every parent out there of a toddler.
We can't wait. We got to trust the doctors. The doctor said, do it. By God, I'm doing it.
It's insane.
That's where we're at.
That white lab coat, it is a powerful, powerful thing. It's gonna claim a lot of victims this year if they go through with this thing. Hey, Robert, thanks for the call, man.
Got
to jump to a break. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Alex Berenson, a former New York Times reporter, he's an actual journalist. I disagree with Alex Berenson on several different things, but he has certainly been on top of vaccine news. I'll tell you what he said about the trials of this Pfizer shot for children, just to let you know. He said they found 375 SARS-CoV-2 infections during the course of the trial. 365 of those occurred before the third dose. Only 10 occurred after the third dose. So what did they do? They used that figure of the 10. They just discounted the 365 cases of COVID that occurred during the trial as these children were being injected, and they focused in on the 10 and gave you a number that says now it is 90% effective by ignoring what I believe was about 97% of the infections. I've never seen this kind of statistical manipulation in anything to this degree before that is so easily torn apart by doctors and journalists across the board. They're not on NBC. They're not going to be on your pediatrician's website. Hopefully, maybe some. I'd like to think there's some good pediatricians out there that would just say, oh my, for the love of God, no, I'm not giving this to my patients. This thing hadn't been studied. These children are still developing. You know, a child's life and development is kind of like a ship going across the Atlantic. If you just bump it by 1 degree, you end up in an entirely different destination by the time you've made that long journey. These children are just starting to form. Their organs are still developing. Their brain is still developing. And they have no long-term safety studies on these shots. And you have got medical groups right now teasing parents, saying, what you've been waiting for, parents? We can't wait to announce to you the day that you can bring your toddler in, your 6 month in, for an untested vaccine. No long-term safety studies. They'll tell you it's been tested. But I'm telling you, even the test, you need to dig deep into the testing itself to find out if that's even worth anything. I'll be right back. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. In a little bit, we're going to get to some tech news. You know, the AI story is interesting to me. I had an AI expert on. It's been a couple of years ago. I may need to reach back out to him again. I don't really buy into the hype of AI. There's a difference, as I understand it, and believe me, you were talking to somebody who, if something happens to my computer, I turn it off and I turn it back on. 90% of the time, that works. That's my solution. It's pretty much my solution to anything. Just reboot. I don't understand these things, but from what I've gleaned, because I have an interest in technology stuff, that there's a difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning. Machine learning is if you just get a machine that can just take in tons and tons and tons of information that it can then spit back out at some point. That's not thinking for itself. That's just a huge database of things to draw on. AI, this idea is that it can more structure thought almost in the computer world, where there's a Google engineer out there he's a little worried. I don't know, maybe the guy's schizophrenic and doesn't know what he's talking about, but it's interesting to me nonetheless as we embark upon this new technological journey. I've got other tech news too, and we'll also take a look at Bitcoin. In crypto, I'm going to try to reach out if Steven Utroska is available. I'm going to have him on for a couple of minutes to explain to us what's going on in the crypto markets. I don't know if you're a crypto investor, but there is blood in the streets with the cryptocurrencies this year. A lot of people lost a lot of money on these things. Is it a buying opportunity, or is this just a sign that as the economy comes unraveled, crypto is going to unravel with it as well? There's a fun little story that I ran across during the news break there. Gas prices, we already know about. We know the baby formula apparently is still weeks away from being figured out. And I've not seen any stories. Again, I don't watch the mainstream media. Are we having children die, or are parents actually figuring out a way to feed their children without Abbott Labs? I really hope. This is a teachable moment. Maybe you don't need a pharmaceutical company to feed your child. Maybe you can do it on your own. You know, I'm chronically dissatisfied, trust me. Maybe I have like a sixth sense to find contempt for government. During the news breaks today, you're hearing that we've got cooling centers set up. These are government-run cooling centers at community levels. Now, there may be some people who are not able to afford air conditioning, and this is going to be good for them. It's going to be very hot today, but I can't help myself but think, we need the government to protect us from a hot day now. We can't figure out a relative. You can't get a few neighbors, get together and say, hey, we can't all afford air conditioners, but for those really hot days, maybe we could get a window unit that we pass around, or we all congregate somewhere, or, you know, somebody in the local community that owns a business that's got some area. People can come in and cool off a little bit. We need the government to do it. And when the government does it, it's kind of funny to me. It's for 60 years and older. You're a 59-year-old heart patient. Obese, the heat's really starting to get to you. You're on the verge of heat stroke. What do they tell you? Nope, sorry. We need to see your ID. 60 years and older. 58? No. Get back out there. I mean, it's just, you don't need the government to not be hot. Anyway, here's another consequence of what our government does to us. Ladies, I don't know how much longer you're going to put up with this stuff.
And women are not only faced with a baby formula shortage, but now tampons are in short supply across the U.S. Reports of shortages in feminine hygiene products have been circulating. Tampons especially have become difficult to find. The brand missing the most on store shelves is Tampax. Its maker, Procter & Gamble, released a statement acknowledging that some consumers may be currently be unable to find what they need. According to a spokesperson, the company is working with retailers and producing tampons around the clock to make sure shelves don't remain empty. And according to experts, the rising price of raw materials like cotton are part of the reason for the shortage and a spike in tampon and pad prices.
Okay, let me tell you who is responsible for the great tampon shortage right now as costs have become prohibitive for manufacturing and supply chains have been broken. The Federal Reserve. Anyone? Anyone? The Federal Reserve. You want to know why raw costs are higher for the manufacturer of any products? The Federal Reserve. I've told you. It is the Death Star. Now it's affecting feminine products, sanitary products. It's a good thing we don't understand central banking here in the United States, because for if we did, as Henry Ford said, there'd be a revolution by tomorrow morning. Latest 30-year average mortgage has surged to a stunning 6.13% from 3.25% at the start of the year. Highest rate since the great housing crash of 2007-2008, in the process of sending house affordability to the lowest on record. The story goes on to say, alas, it's about to get even lower because a simple back-of-the-envelope calculation reveals that the jump in mortgage rates from 3.25% to 6.13% means that new home buyers face an average monthly payment on a typical new $350,000 mortgage. The median existing home sale price is just under $400,000. That new mortgage payment has gone up from $1,523 to $2,128, a 40% increase in 6 months. Another way of putting this, at a 6.13% mortgage, and rates will keep rising for a long time with the Fed now set to hike between 125 basis points and 150 basis points in the next 2 months, the average home price needs to fall 30% to reach pre-COVID affordability. Whether it was intended or not, the Fed is about to unleash the biggest housing crisis since the busting of the 2007 bubble. It also means that in a few weeks, the Fed's scramble to undo the damage it has done to the U.S. economy will make March 2020 seem like a walk in the park. Now, remember, the problem is not what the Fed is about to do now that is going to crush home prices and the housing market. The problem is what the Fed has been doing for 100 years, but more specifically for the last 13 years in creating the housing bubble that many people thought was this great panacea out there. My housing values, I'm rich, I'm rich, because my housing values kept going up. A 30% decline just to get to pre-COVID affordability, and I've already done the math with you on shows previous, that home affordability, even pre-COVID, was nothing like it was in the 1970s, or in 1970 itself. Now, what do I believe is going to happen here? I believe eventually the Fed's going to stop raising interest rates and they're just going to let inflation run. So maybe you won't see the tanking in your home price. Maybe they'll prop these up somehow. I do actually believe what will happen is maybe even heading into the midterms, maybe they'll do some kind of a subsidy. Maybe they'll kind of help you with a mortgage payment. They'll give you a little something extra, maybe the capping, some kind of a price control on mortgages or on mortgage rates. And they'll say, well, we're just going to cap interest rates on home mortgages at 5%, 5.5%, and whatever the market bears, the government will pay the difference. This will be, anyone, inflationary. This is the box that the Federal Reserve has put itself in. They cannot make a move that does not cause damage. Now that the inflation has been released onto the citizens, there is no way out without massive pain. I've told you, we need a housing crash. I've got 21-year-old children. I want to see a big housing crash so they've got a chance at some level of home ownership at some point if they choose to. Personally, I'm outside of the real estate market now. A crash would be, I've got all the time in the world. I can wait. This is also coming down the pike at you when it talks about inflation. Following the CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, unexpected crushing of the peak inflation narrative, analysts expected PPI, that's the Producer Price Index. This is the cost that are at the manufacturing level to get all the raw materials in to produce the products that we buy. The PPI, they expected it to slow modestly. Turns out it rose at 10.8% year over year. That's the Producer Price Index. That means it is up for the 25th straight month of increasing prices. Now, let me remind you of something. And I'm sorry I keep doing this, but if you want to learn economics, you've got to drop the partisanship. Because you've got to understand that what has taken place over the last 13 years has spanned Republican and Democrat governments. It's just like it's like a mission I have to break this conditioning of people that you're going to vote your way out of this. How long has Joe Biden been in office? He took the reins on January 20th of 2021. It is now June. What is that, 17 months? Joe Biden's been in office 17 months. The Producer Price Index has been rising for 25 straight months. Inflation was getting kicked off before Joe Biden even won the election. Because this is a consequence of the money printing of the last 13 years that is causing this. But what this also says is if consumer inflation is rising at 8.6%, but producer prices are rising at 10.8%, that's a 2.2% price increase that they've not even passed on to the consumer yet. Manufacturers are eating that. This is contrary to the Elizabeth Warrens and the Bernie Sanders and all of the Democrats out there saying this is corporate greed that is making prices go up. Actually, it's the reverse. Corporations are scared to raise prices to reflect the extra cost that they have in production. So there's 2.2% of inflation that's just sitting out there. And right now, the manufacturers, the producers, are eating it. They're taking that as a cut to their profit margins. But trust me, they can't do that forever. So we've got a spring-loaded 2.2% added inflation on top of the 8.6% that they're telling us right now. And we all know that even that 8% number is low, that it's double whatever the government tells you it is in real-world scenario, the way they calculated it back in 1980. So you've got another 2.6% or higher on top of the 16-17% inflation is right now. Luckily, we've got some smart people in control of this stuff. They know what they're talking about. Trust me, you can trust the Federal Reserve, the masters of the universe. Go on CNBC. They bow to them. They give them great deference because they are the masters of all knowing. They are the saviors of our economy each time. They are in quiet deliberations on what to do to benefit the American people because they know what's going on. Just sit down and shut up, citizen. They're in control. Let's take a look at their pronouncements of the last year. One year of talk about inflation. Somebody did it in another genius supercut.
I really doubt that we're going to see an inflationary cycle.
Most economic analysts believe that it will have a temporary or transitory impact.
The faster than expected increase in some of those prices is actually a good sign.
The overwhelming consensus is it's going to pop up a little bit and then go back down. No one's talking about this great, great deal.
This is something that will settle down.
Transitory.
Transitory.
And the data shows that most of the price increases we've seen were expected and expected to be temporary. There's nobody suggesting there's unchecked inflation on the way.
It's highly unlikely that it's going to be long-term inflation that's going to get out of hand. I don't know anybody who's worried about inflation.
Over the last couple of months, we actually saw it trended downward.
President Biden's chief of staff, Ron Klain, enthusiastically retweeted an economist who had said in part, most of the economic problems we're facing, inflation, supply chains, et cetera, are high class problems.
What is the Granholm plan to increase oil production in America?
Oh my God, that is hilarious. Well, the number one thing that the president can do is help get COVID under control. That we know is the root cause of inflation.
President Biden this afternoon saying he thinks we're at the peak of the crisis right now and that lower prices are on the way.
The inflation has everything to do with the supply chain.
Make no mistake, inflation is largely the fault of Putin.
I'm going to do everything I can to minimize Putin's price hike here at home.
If you want to get rid of inflation, the only way to do it is to undo a lot of the Trump tax cuts.
Ever since you've come into office, things are really looking up. You know, gas is up, rent is up, food is up, everything.
Oh, and they, you know, the elites at the White House press correspondents dinner had a big laugh about that, didn't they? A great laugh at that. Yeah, that is the that's the people that we're looking to now to solve our problems. People are asking. I mean, I hear it all the time. People are asking the government to do something about the inflation. The only thing the government can do is create the inflation. On the bright side, there was a story. The headline of it is. Let me find it here. Binge drinking on the rise among women and adults over 65. I got to tell you, who the hell can blame you at this point? I'll be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I?
All right, just to wrap up this financial stuff, and then we're going to come back with some tech news. I'm going to try to reach Stephen Utrasco, my crypto consigliere, and let him explain to us what's going on in the crypto markets and what happened with this company, this crypto lender, Celsius, which basically went belly up, but it did gate its investors or people who have money with them apparently cannot withdraw or transfer any of their money. It's frozen inside this thing. That's not what you want to hear if you're an investor at any point. Now, there was a case during the financial crisis, Michael Burry, who was one of the heroes of the movie The Big Short. At one point, his investors were freaking out because he had made a big bet against the housing market, and it was not going well on the front end of it, and his investors wanted their money back, and he stopped them from taking their money out. It was within the terms of his service, investing with him, that he had the right to stop withdrawals, and he did. And it turned out they made massive amounts of money because he knew what he was doing, and it turned out well. But if you're an investor, the last thing you want to hear is there's trouble out there in the world you're investing in, but we're not going to let you get your money back right now. So I'm interested to know if Stephen has taken a look at this Celsius network. I am wondering... I don't know if I can quantify this or not. I've long suspected there's talk right now that we're going to be in a recession in 2023. Now, the first quarter of 2022, our last quarter, we were in negative growth, 1.5%. If you have two quarters of consecutive negative growth, if the period of April through June, when this month is over, if we have negative growth again, technically that's a recession. It's two quarters of negative growth is what classifies as a recession. And here's the thing about GDP. GDP is essentially, it is taking all of the goods and services, all the economic activity of the country, and then you have to adjust it for inflation. And so let's just say you have 10% growth, but inflation is 5%. That's how the government figures it out. Inflation is 5%. So you have a 5% growth in GDP, right? You had 10% gross growth, essentially, minus the 5% that they allow for, that they say was the inflation rate. That leaves you with 5% still to the good. The problem is that the government underestimates inflation every single year. This is well documented if you're interested. Shadow Stats, John Williams at Shadow Stats talks about how inflation used to be calculated before they did all this weird stuff about the replacement. Essentially, if steak goes up too high, then the federal government just says, well, if steak goes up too high, people are just going to substitute hamburger. So we're going to look at that grocery basket full of stuff and we're just going to take the steak out and replace it with a hamburger. And that lowers the inflation rate. They also have things like hedonics. They make these judgments, these arbitrary judgments on what something's worth to you. Well, this computer has a backlit keyboard. Now, the computer may cost more, but the fact that you've got a backlit keyboard really is we'll take 10% off the new price because that's a great new feature. I mean, it's more complicated than that, but that's basically what it is. It's called hedonics. So they make all of these arbitrary adjustments to inflation to get to this bogus figure to try to convince the American people that there, for years and years, there was no inflation. So if they actually calculated inflation correctly, I'm wondering if we haven't been in recession for most of the last 12 years. Really longer than that. There have been plenty of years where GDP growth during any particular period of time, during Trump's term or Obama's term or Bush's term or Clinton's term. During Clinton's term is when they changed this inflation metric. I believe it was 1992, maybe 93. So at any time during those years, you might have a GDP growth of 1.2%. That means if they understated inflation by more than 1.2%, it means we actually had negative growth during that year. And I believe that we are in and out of recession constantly, notwithstanding what the official numbers tell us, because I don't believe you can rely on the official numbers. The idea that we are going to save ourselves, everybody's got plenty of time to prepare, that there's a recession in 2023, they could be right. I'm chronically wrong on this stuff as far as the official government statistics know, but I am keenly aware of what Americans are going through and have been for 20 to 30 years now as I've studied these things. If you're a business owner or you've got any dogs in the hunt out there in the economy right now, want to share your experience, I'd be interested to hear them. You can always email me, MikeMadison@WYEB.com. I love to hear exactly what people are going through, what they see in the real world. The media is not to be believed. Financial figures, statistics are not to be believed. What you can be believed is what's happening on Main Street in the United States. So if anybody wants to share with me what they've got going on or has a friend or somebody who wants to share with me, I can either read it on air, attributing it to you or not. I can keep you anonymous, or I can just not read it. I'm just very curious as to what's going on right now. But we're careening towards something right now. It doesn't look pretty. When I come back, we'll get into Tech Tuesday and start talking a little bit about what's going on in the crypto markets. You know, I understand sometimes these segments are, they almost confuse me when I get done with them, but it is fascinating. This is a wild west. Crypto is the wild west. I'm attracted to that kind of stuff. I cheer it. I want the government out of it. It's going to be rocky. There's going to be people who speculate and win and people who speculate and lose. It's the Wild West. I think that that's preferable to the government sticking their nose in there and manipulating it themselves. I'd rather have the Wild West. But the Wild West right now is pretty rocky. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today, as I do on some Tuesdays. It's my least consistent segment, but I am fascinated by the world of technology. And so when I find compelling news, I try to bring these stories. We'll get into the AI stuff in just a little bit. But I wanted to talk about one of the burgeoning technologies that's out there right now that a lot of people are paying attention to, a lot of people have gotten involved with, and that's the cryptocurrency markets. And I got to tell you, I know enough about them to be just dangerous. I'm more scratch my head about cryptocurrency than anything else. When it comes to the value or the usefulness of it, I cheer anything that is decentralized, that is not controlled by the government, but I am fully willing to admit I do not understand a lot about it. So I bring in my crypto consigliere, Steven Utroska, who's a crypto guy. Is it because you're younger than me? Is that why I'm so out of tune with this stuff? Is it just an age thing?
Yeah, that might be it. But my wife told me this week that I'm middle-aged, so I don't know that I'm quite so young as some of these young Gen Zers now. I'm one of the older millennials, but maybe that's the difference between you and I.
Well, okay, so tell us what's going on. Boy, Bitcoin has taken a prison pounding just in the last few days. It had kind of settled in at 30,000, which was a little bit over 50% from its down from its high. I think it peaked at, 69,000, came back down, kind of floated around 30,000. In the last few days, it's taken a big leg down. I think now it's around 24,400, something like that. What's going on in the crypto world right now?
Yeah, no, it's actually, I think at its lowest point within the last few days was 22,000 some change. So it has really taken a fall again. I mean, it's going with the market. You know, last time I came on your show and we talked about crypto, we did a segment on it. You know, I talked about how a lot of people see crypto as more than just a currency, but more of an asset that they're using similar to the stock market. It's an investment. And so along with the stock market is taking crashes, so crypto is too, and crypto is more so taking crashes than the stock market because it's just new technology. People don't understand it. They're not sure about it. So if they are pulling cash out of any investment, crypto seems to be the first place they turn because they are still unsure about it. It's so volatile and doesn't have a long legacy to look at like the stock market does. Investors, that's the first place they're pulling their money out of is crypto. So crypto, over the last few months has taken a dive. And then it just in the last few days, it's really taken another dive. And again, I think it's just inflation numbers are coming out showing, that this, what the federal government doesn't want to admit, but this recession that we're in, our economy is poor. We are quickly moving into a, bad time for a lot of people. And so, again, the people who are trying to hold out and believe in crypto are now looking at prices rising and everything, and their crypto either staying low or, still continuing to trend down a little bit. And so this week, with new numbers coming out to showing that our economy is continuing to drop, they went in and I think pulled more money out. They're okay taking the losses that they had up till this point, but they're saying I can't do it any longer, so they're pulling more of their money out.
Well, are you surprised that it has reacted with the NASDAQ, that it has been so correlated to that? Because I would have thought that maybe crypto had set itself up as an asset class rather than just a currency, but that it has been an investment. That people would have actually seen it as some level of a flight to safety out of the markets. I know it's always been volatile, so that's kind of a flight to safety, but an alternative to the market rather than something that actually trends with the NASDAQ. I've been a little surprised by that.
Yeah, no, I think it has been the trend of it basically since its life of being in the public sector, at least over the last 10 years, is it has always kind of followed the stock market. And I think that's because it hasn't had widespread adoption as a currency. You see more countries that are coming out, more businesses are coming out now that are accepting Bitcoin or some of the alternative coins as a form of currency. But until it's widespread that more and more businesses are taking it where you can actually use that crypto as a currency, most people aren't seeing it, investing in it as a currency, as a hedge against the economy going down. They're seeing that just as an investment like the stock market. So I think we'll continue to see that until there's more widespread adoption. I think just like many other times where we've gone into recessions, you've seen, stocks drop, and there's been companies that didn't make it out of recessions. Their stocks, basically dropping down to nothing where people don't have any, they have no desire to want to, fund some of these businesses anymore because they see them going down, trending down, and they go out of business. I think you'll see the same thing with cryptos. There's thousands of cryptos that are out on the market.
Like 19,000 now, aren't there?
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, and they're websites set up to help you start your own, blockchain on some of these other blockchains. So there's a handful of major blockchains out there. They have systems set up so that you can start a crypto on their blockchain. But I think you'll see a lot of those die out. I think you'll see a lot of the alternative, the ones that are unknown to most people, they'll probably die. People will start taking their money out of those first. I think Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, some of the bigger ones like that, I don't think they'll have quite the long-term effects from this. In our 10-year, kind of trend that we can see of crypto, it's always been, peaks and valleys. But just like the stock market has had a consistent trend upward. And, so if it continues to work like the stock market always has, even if it doesn't get widespread adoption as a currency, I think that even just as an investment like stocks, I think that we'll continue to see that trend like the stock market always has. There's always been a trend upward for it.
Yeah.
And, if you're in the early days of the stock market. People were probably saying the same thing then. I don't know how this thing's going to work. I don't know about investing in public people, investing in businesses like this. Keep your money out of it. This is going to turn out badly. And then you have, the stock market crash. And then people are really thinking, man, this is not a good thing. We should never do this. Keep your, keep all your money in cash or gold or silver, which, hard assets like gold and silver are probably never a bad thing. But people, I think, were probably saying the same thing about the stock market after the crash in the, late 20s that they're saying now about crypto.
To me, one of the difficult things about cryptocurrency, and particularly we'll just use Bitcoin because it obviously is the OG, the Mac Daddy there. When you look at a business, you can look at it and they will report to you how much profit that they made in a year. We know, how much real estate they own and what it's worth at current levels. There's a whole lot of specific numbers that go into the valuation of a stock. It doesn't mean that things don't, take place like Tesla, where there's all these, we think they're the leader. There's a lot of hype built into a stock, and it may go significantly higher than maybe is warranted. But with a lot of companies, you can kind of dig down deep into them and figure out some cost, some idea of what a company is worth, and then look and see if their stock price is reflecting that, if it's too high, if it's too low. But with cryptocurrency, the one thing I've never figured out is who the hell knows what the cryptocurrency is only worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it. Doesn't seem to me that there are any numbers that you can dig down deep into and do an analysis and say, well, it should settle in at this. This is a fair value for it, because you just don't know how many people tomorrow, next week, next month, next year are going to want to buy it from you.
Right. No, I think that's true for, certainly for Bitcoin. And it's the most widely sought after because it is the original. So people have the most trust in that. But, I think I mentioned this last time I was on the air, too. A lot of these cryptocurrencies are now coming out are actually tied to a business. They're tied to tech companies.
Yeah.
And instead of going public on the stock market, they are now using their own cryptocurrencies as a way to invest in the business. So you have a whole slew of cryptocurrencies that are that exact thing, that they actually have investor calls. They'll have quarterly reports on how well they're doing, and they'll show how much money they brought in. And so you can track that. Some of the ones that are not tied to companies, that are literally just, supply and demand is the only thing that's driving them. Even those now, you can look at who the creator, who the developer, who the designer, who's the team behind it, who's pushing it, and, decide for yourself. If you want to go through that much research, you can look at that and find that about a lot of these. There's been some that nobody knows who created them. Nobody knows exactly what team designed it or who's behind it. And those are the ones that people are now kind of turning against because, they have no faith in it.
Yeah.
If they don't know who's behind it. So a lot of the newer ones that are coming out, they're very public about who they are or why they're starting it. And most of them now aren't just purely supply and demand currencies. They actually have applications or utilities behind them. They do something.
Yeah, that's interesting
that
to me.
Useful.
Yeah, that's interesting to me to have a way to fund a company and to, to be able to participate in a company without Wall Street's involvement in it. That's very interesting to me. We only got a couple of minutes left, but I did want to ask you about this. This has been just a couple of days in. Celsius Network, one of the biggest crypto lenders, told customers Sunday evening that it is pausing withdrawals, swap, and transfers between accounts in a move that has sparked discussions and prompted the price of the firm's token to take a 60% tumble in the past hour. That was as of the writing of this show, this story, to as low as 19 cents. What is this? We talked last time you were on. I think I brought you on because of the Luna collapse, which I didn't understand,
yep.
But it was obviously a complete wipeout. What is this Celsius Network? What is a crypto lender, and what happened to them?
Yeah, so, that comes back to when you have cryptocurrency, when you hold that, you can either hold it in an exchange, you can hold it in a custodial wallet or a non-custodial wallet. And when you have it on an exchange or you have it in a custodial wallet, someone else has access to that where they can stop you from taking out, they can stop you from trading, they can stop you because they have access to that. A non-custodial wallet means you own the keys, which is just a phrase that you use. It prevents anyone but you with those keys from accessing that wallet. And then there's a hard wallet, too, that you can have. But basically, you know, when we look at the truckers in Canada, a lot of those are using cryptocurrencies to, you know, for fundraising and to, you know, support each other or whatever. And they, a lot of them were using non-custodial wallets. So the government of Canada came out and said, you know, wallet, we want you to shut these people down so they can't access their money. And one of the companies put out a letter, you know, sent a letter back to the Canadian government saying, obviously, you don't understand what non-custodial means, but we can't do that. And we designed it that way, so we can't do it. So if you're holding your money in an exchange or in a bank type situation, you know, like Celsius is, you have to know that that's a risk.
So Celsius is an exchange? Is Celsius classified as an exchange like Coinbase is?
Yeah, I've never used them, so I'm not, you know, intimately familiar with the organization, how it's set up. But I think they do that, but they also allow for, if you hold crypto, to be able to loan that out to other people. So they're an intermediary.
Right, and you get like a yield on your crypto, don't you?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that seemed a little suspicious to me, to get a yield off of a product that really has no yield. And I guess they're getting it off of whatever they're charging for people to borrow the cryptocurrencies. But anyway, it's interesting. It's the Wild West. There's going to be weird things. This is unfortunately the result of these kinds of things is always call for more government intervention and regulation, which is really the last thing I want to see. People have got to understand they're taking a risk on being in the market and just put their big boy pants on and understand this is a risky new technology and let's just let the free market sort it out. But we know that the government, as they see these things, is going to try to step in and try to regulate the crap out of this thing. So that's always
Number one rule to investing is never put in more money than you're willing to lose.
Yeah, I would imagine there are millennials and Gen Zers across this country that did not heed that advice. I would imagine there are a lot of people who have lost a lot of money here, but, you know, a lot of people have made money too. It's the Wild West. So, well, it's all interesting. Real quick prediction. So we're at around 22 and a half right now, 22,374, I guess, was the close as of last night. What's your prediction a year from now? Where's Bitcoin?
I think a year from now, I think it comes back up. I think we're back up. I think a year from now, we're back up to mid 40s. But I think that there's a possibility between now and then we see it come back down further. I think I don't know that 22 is the floor. I think more like below 20, maybe 18 is a potential floor for it. But, you know, that's just a wild guess.
Yeah.
But I think a year from now, I think we'll come back up. I think going into the 24 election, seeing what's going to happen there, I think once all investors across stock market, across all kind of investments, once we see what happens in 24, everything will start coming back up because I think we'll get, you know, I think this year we'll see Republicans take over. I think going into 24, we'll see a Republican president probably take over. And I think the economy will start improving.
Yeah, well, if you think Bitcoin is going to be higher in a year, you better hope it detaches from the NASDAQ, because I do not believe the NASDAQ will be higher in a year. Of course, I've been chronically wrong about those kinds of things, but if we have the kind of recession that I think a lot of people are expecting, then the markets are going to tank. Cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin in particular has got to detach from that trend line. Yep. All right. Thanks, Stephen Utroska, my crypto consigliere. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye. All right. Quick break. We'll be right back. I should be able to squeeze a little bit more tech news in. Stay with me. All right, last few minutes of the show, but this was a pretty fascinating story. Again, there's a difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning. If you give a machine, a computer with great computing power, a bunch of information, and it's taught how to draw, I don't even want to use the term taught, programmed, how to draw that information back out, you can get a lot of pretty astounding things out of computers. Teaching it to think for itself is a slightly different thing, and being sentient is an entirely different thing altogether. Sentient being aware, essentially alive. A senior software engineer at Google who signed up to test Google's artificial intelligence tool called Lambda, that's the language model for dialogue applications, has claimed that the AI robot is in fact sentient and has thoughts and feelings. During a series of conversations with Lambda, 41-year-old Blake Lamone presented the computer with various scenarios through which analysis could be made, included religious themes, whether the artificial intelligence could be goaded into using discriminatory or hateful speech. Sometimes these things do say rude things. I've seen stories about that. That terrifies me. Lamoni came away with the perception that Lambda was indeed sentient and was endowed with sensations and thoughts all of its own. He said, quote, "If I didn't know exactly what it was, which is this computer program we built recently, I think it was a 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid that happens to know physics." This was a story that appeared in the Daily Mail in the UK, even though this is an American dude. He's been fired by Google for disclosing essentially trade secrets or giving, proprietary information. He says, "I'm not really sharing any company information. I'm just recounting a conversation I had with a coworker." He's talking about this thing. It's pretty interesting stuff, I will say. And I'd encourage people to just read it. This is one of those things I find fascinating, and it's probably another one of these things. I don't care whether it's mRNA shots. There's just certain things we probably shouldn't be messing around with. And if we are, then you would like to think there's some serious guardrails on it. And I have no idea if this is just really advanced machine learning or if this is some sentient AI computer. All of these things are, I don't know. I can just see how these things go sideways. We got enough going sideways in this country right now. We don't need this. That's all the time I got today. See you tomorrow. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.